You're listening to The Big Cast, your source for the latest in financial technology. Brought to you weekly by the Best Innovation Group, with your hosts, John Best and Glenn Cervotti.
Welcome to another edition of The Big Cast. My name is Glenn Cervotti on behalf of the Best Innovation Group, where we like to do cool things with financial technology, and we like to actually keep our finger on the pulse of what others are doing in the realm of financial technology as well. And that's exactly what this episode will be about. We're going to be recapping the highlights from last week's Finovate Europe event that took place in London, and we'll have conversations with two of the companies that I thought really stood out with their demos on the stage, Dreams and Finshape, both of whom have made some interesting changes in their businesses in recent months, as you'll be hearing, and both of whom just so happened to win Best of Show accolades as well from the audience vote that happened at the end of the event. So just stay tuned. We'll be getting to those in just one second. First off, let me just remind you that you can find out more about the Best Innovation Group at big-fintech.com. If you go to the media tab, you'll find lots and lots of past episodes of the Big Cast, but you'll also find lots of other great information there about products like ACE, the API connection experts, and the interactive voice experience, the Five product. Check both of those out. Another one I want to definitely draw your attention to in terms of cool things that Best Innovation Group is doing right now is the CU Crypto Report. And I'm going to focus that around three words that I think are the key takeaways: free, crowdsourced, and anonymized. What we're trying to do there is track and understand exactly how credit union members are already engaging in the cryptocurrency space. And in order to do that, the Best Innovation Group is gathering, on a crowdsourced basis, anonymized information about how transactions are flowing with customer deposits and balances, member deposits, into those crypto exchanges. And in the process of doing that, hopefully generating some really good industry-wide information and insights and feeding those back into the participating credit unions totally free. No charge to this whatsoever. So I encourage you to check that out. You'll find a link to that at the Best Innovation Group website, or you can go there directly, cucrypto.report. I was disappointed that I was not able to make it there in person this time to Finovate Europe, which took place in London. It was great that they actually managed to get back on stage in person. But I was very pleasantly surprised at how well it worked. I think I've not been shy about the fact that I'm a big fan of in-person events. I mean, I think that in most cases, the idea of doing something on a remote basis is a pale imitation in most cases. But I think this one, the model really worked well. And I think part of it is because Finovate's basic structure just lends itself a bit better to the remote approach than most. I think that the live angle is more important than the in-person angle. And they had some really good camera work so that the 7-minute demos that Finovate's known for really came across very well from my standpoint on screen, because you could really see everything that was going on. And Greg Palmer, our usual host on stage, his intentionally groaner type jokes I thought were at an absolute peak level in this time around, so I really enjoyed that too. I took my usual approach in terms of looking at this, which if you've listened in the past, and as I've said before, you can go back and check out our archives at the website if you want to go back to find other past Finovate demos and conversations we've had with standout companies. But I always take the same approach to this. I do not arrange any discussions with these companies in advance. I wait and see. This time I believe there were 27 demos. Usually there's more than that. Usually it's more in the 50 to 60 range. But I wait and see which ones I really like. And then those are the ones that I reach out to and ask to do interviews. And it just so happened that this time around, two of the ones that I that stood out to me did wind up winning Best of Show. So, that was the basic process. And I wound up, as usual, the folks that I said, hey, I really liked your business. Do you want to talk? Fortunately, they were interested in talking. So that's where we're going to go right now. I have an admission, though. I did not technically vote for Dreams as Best of Show. And the reason was you're allowed three votes. And there were four companies that really stood out to me, and I was so certain that Dreams was going to win that I figured, okay, they don't really need my vote. They're going to be okay without me, so I'm going to give my vote to the other three companies. But as I correctly assumed, Dreams did win, and I had reached out to them already. And Elena Vallon, their CFO, was gracious enough to speak with us, as we've done before, as you'll hear in this interview. I'm here with Elena Vallon, CFO of Dreams Technology, based in Stockholm. I met Elena. She did the presentation at Finovate Fall last September, and was gracious enough to join us when we met in person that time. And I know our dedicated listeners probably have committed to memory everything that you said on an episode 6 months ago. But Elena, first off, thanks again for taking the time, and congratulations for winning yet another Best of Show.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
So given, you know, that maybe people don't remember, you know, chapter and verse what you said last time, can you just give a quick overview of the Dreams value proposition? And I know you've had several changes since we spoke in September that we'll get into as well.
Absolutely. So Dreams is a Stockholm-based fintech. What's unique about Dreams is we apply science and we package it in a software as a service solution to effectively deliver next level customer engagement for the financial industry.
And the idea that I saw, this is in many ways, it's an attempt to get people to think past the near term and encourage savings in particular. And the two things that really jump out at me from the presentation is presence bias, overcoming the whole notion of presence, as well as the, you know, and doing that by applying what you call save hacks. So maybe if you could say a bit about those.
Precisely. So we're trying to solve for two things from kind of the financial industry perspective. I think there's a lot of pressure right now to try to understand how to recreate relationships, those relationships that perhaps our grandparents had with their bank tellers, the bank tellers who understood where they are in life and kind of saw them, you know, month over month, growing up, maybe perhaps even from an infant stage to a mature adult, to a family person, and so on. Banks in the digital world today are amazing transactors, and they have fairly complex and wide array of financial instruments. But what they really struggle with is engaging the customer on the same level as that teller would 40 or 50 years ago. So by not being able to be present and be kind of there for those ongoing lifelong dialogues, the banking industry has lost a bit of the personal touch. And so when we look also at how money has become invisible and how easy it is to spend, how easy it is to become indebted, I mean, you have whole industries around credit and lending and unsecured consumer loans, buy now, pay later schemes, and so on, that make it very, very easy to consume, frankly, for money that we don't always have. The individuals are put in a situation where they struggle. So there's stress. There's lack of financial resilience. So we're trying to solve for, through the Dreams technology platform, for two things. We're trying to recreate this kind of notion of relationships in the banking space, relationships that can be long-term, lifelong, relevant, and that feel very personal, while at the same time helping the end customer, the bank's end customer, kind of recover their financial well-being and live more resilient, sustainable lives.
Interesting.
So the notion of the presence bias, or the notion of the science that we embedded, is something that looks at individuals and money and tries to recreate a bridge, an emotional bridge between people and their financial future selves. And the presence bias effectively really means that for us, here and now is so visceral and so present that it's really, really difficult to plan, let alone set money aside for a version of us, let's say 5, 10, 20, or even 30 years from now. So the longer the distance to that future self, the more distant of a stranger that person feels. The notion of save hacks that Dreams introduced is really a way to showcase to individuals how easy it is, without telling them, but really showing them how easy it is to find money to save, money that they thought they didn't have, and then frankly also how to turn those savings into investments, how to cross the threshold from them being savers to them actually identifying themselves as investors.
And that's one of the things that we had a bit of a conversation before, that it seems is a kind of a shift or a pivot in your business model. And there's been a couple of them since we last mm-hmm. talked in September. And I jotted down that you used the phrase, you know, as you just did now, turning deposits into investments and AUM, assets under management. So is that something new? Because it seemed like earlier the focus was on savings, but now you're actually kind of, you've got an investment play as well?
Yes, we do. So we've always had a kind of a three-tier solution when it comes to the direct-to-consumer services that we offered ourselves on our platform in the Nordic markets, in Sweden and Norway. What we offered was kind of this first step of individuals being able to save money. The second step, which came quite natural, is the longer the dreams or the longer the financial goals had become, the more it became important for us to nudge individuals into the market, into becoming investors. And then kind of the third leg of the more holistic solution was to also help these same individuals pay back their loans, pay back their debts. Now that we are in a B2B SaaS space, we've modularized these services. So the first service that we offered the banking clients was our savings module. And that module, once again, help the banks engage, especially their younger audiences, into starting to save, but also through the Dreams platform, obtain as many as 15 kind of monthly interactions through a fairly low engagement product such as savings, interactions that they could then use to make sure that they understand the customers better, that they can offer more personal approach and more relevant kind of products that were coming at the right point in time in their lives. The investment product solves for a slightly different challenge that the banks are facing. So the investment product is still a way for the end customer to cross the threshold into the market and to starting to invest. However, for the bank, the challenge is really interesting. When we just look at European banks, there's nearly 9 trillion euros sitting on banking balance sheets in the form of deposits. Now, of course, in some ways, these deposits are strengthening the balance sheets when it comes to reserves, when it comes to cost of capital, but 9 trillion is in excess. And those 9 trillion need to be, and this is household deposits, right? These are deposits held by individuals, held by households. So these deposits do require activation, and it needs to be a conscious choice on behalf of the individuals to activate their own deposits, not to just keep them as savings. Because in some markets, such as Germany, there's actually negative interest on deposits. It costs the banks so much that they're starting to charge their own customers for having kind of current accounts, for having savings accounts. So from the bank's perspective, the ability to activate those deposits means having more assets under management. And that actually means more yield. The margins on those assets are much more viable, much more healthy.
And that's a greater yield, not only for the bank, but for the consumer as well.
Exactly. That's what I was going to add. This is also much better utility of money, their money, right? It opens up doors to having that money grow. At the very least, trying to match the inflation rate, which is very high right now, and to be frank, probably will get higher in the coming months. But it's also a way for them to again, lock that money also for when they would need it, which is maybe a little bit further down the road.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, something else that you mentioned, which is another shift to the business model, I think pretty exciting stuff too. Originally in the Nordic countries, Dreams went to market as a consumer direct business. People were actually seeing the Dreams brand. I know mm-hmm. last time we spoke, you were starting to work as a white label, actually enabling banks to use the solution under their own branding. And from what you've told me, you've actually kind of put your money where your mouth is in terms of kind of making that pivot. Can you say a bit about that?
Absolutely. So Dreams had built a platform, a technical platform, again, targeting financial well-being, targeting banking engagement. In the Nordics, we consumed our own platform under the Dreams brand and offered it to nearly 500,000 users in Sweden and in Norway with the 3 modules that I mentioned before, save, invest, and manage your debts. However, in the Nordics, we've always been the second, kind of a user's second app. We never competed against their primary bank. And when we looked at how would we expand this offering and how would we reach as many individuals as possible, but perhaps by partnering with their primary financial providers, it was a very natural step, timing-wise as well, to start partnering with banks, especially incumbents who are feeling the pressure from challengers and other fintechs, but to be honest, also other fintechs. So by partnering with the banks, we can be right there where the customer already is, and we can kind of offer the same services to help them live better, more sustainable lives. When it comes, however, to our direct-to-consumer solution, we haven't turned it down or turned it off. What we've done instead is we partnered with an amazing partner, BNP Paribas, to spin it up into a sustainable neobank. It will start in the Nordics. It has already started at the beginning of this year, and it will focus on sustainability.
And that is a standalone joint venture. And then, as I understand it, your company now where you, is Dreams Technology, and you're focused on providing the platform to financial institutions. And one of your customers now being the Dreams Sustainable Bank.
So we have three customers in the platform. The first one is actually a subsidiary of BNP Paribas, which went live last year, called Ukrisi Bank. It's their Ukrainian bank. Of course, unfortunately, they've been quite affected by the latest events in Ukraine. And then the second two are Dream Sustainable in Sweden and in Norway.
Got it. And I know you've mentioned, and last time we were speaking, you were beginning to build a pipeline in the U.S., and from what you've told me, your pipeline is robust, but you're focused right now on kind of building out that European presence first?
Yes. So last year, following kind of the news of our partnership with BNP, to be honest, also having received several awards in the US, we've generated quite a lot of demand. Also, we have Dreams Institute, which is our science subsidiary, and they have published several white papers. Those too kind of drew considerable demand. So we have in our current pipeline, we have some of the largest banking groups in the world, including those in the US. It's leaning more towards incumbents who are our target audience, but also including some challenger banks, both in Europe as well as in the US.
So in terms of, you know, going to market, watch this space, I guess might be the way to put it. You don't have anybody live in the US, but you've definitely got people moving in that direction.
Absolutely. And having come from the States, I would love to see the Dream solution in that market.
Yeah, I'll definitely be watching closely on that one. That should be fascinating. The other thing that I was curious about, you mentioned the 9 trillion of deposits in the EU. I'm kind of curious how the situation differs in Europe. Obviously, it's a lot of deposits. The storyline since the pandemic here in the States has been that banks have had more deposits than they know what to do with. And when you talk about negative interest rates, to some extent that's true, but you know, there's been some talk that banks weren't all that anxious to gather more deposits here in the States. I see that tide turning a bit lately, but I'm curious, or at least I'm hearing that it's turning a bit lately. Was that the case during the pandemic in Europe, or have you ever seen kind of a slowdown in the desire to, you know, foster more savings? Or maybe, as you say, it's more a matter of, yeah, we got the savings, but we'd like to put it to use to try to make that conversion into the investment side.
I think initially it was definitely kind of the buildup in deposits and reserves was seen as a positive trend, but it did come to a breaking point where it became a bit too much, right? And those are the deposits that I think banks now are definitely looking to activate.
Interesting. So yeah, that's another one. It's interesting the way, like you mentioned, kind of the multiple layers of the business. So you've got, you know, not only attracting deposits, but then taking the deposits the next step of bringing it to use. And that age-old problem, too, of primary financial institution, as you mentioned. So now, you know, with a BNP Paribas name, you know, the direct consumers, it makes more sense there as well.
Absolutely. And I mean, we need to be mindful that now we have one of the largest intergenerational wealth transfers starting to happen, right? And that wealth, the banks would like to retain.
Oh, absolutely. That's right. I jotted down something else from your presentation about the it was, I think, in the couple thousand range of the amount additional in euro that's saved on your platform compared to with banks. Can you refresh my memory on that statistic?
Absolutely. So when we look at the metrics, especially the metrics that we've seen here in the Nordics since 2016, two out of three customers feel less stressed after just using our solution for a couple of months. I would say about 30% start dreaming long-term, which is quite phenomenal given that we have this kind of empathy gap to bridge. And when it comes to savings, about 2,000 euros a year more.
Compared to a typical bank account.
Yes.
That's very impressive.
So do visit our website, dreamstech.com. And from there, you can contact us. So you'll find our contact information there.
And again, dreamstech.com is the, you know, the version that is actually working with the financial institutions to bring this to market.
Correct.
Wonderful. Elena Vallon, the CFO of Dreams, thanks so much again. Again, congratulations for, I guess, your third Best of Show. It sounds like you've now covered both the West Coast and East Coast and the European versions of Finovate. And I know you've been the one on stage for at least two of those. So great talking
to you. Thank you. Likewise, Glenn. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So the last time, as we referred to at the beginning of that little segment, the last time I met with Elena, the only time I've actually met her in person, was at Finovate New York back last September when we were just coming out of lockdowns. And she was a last-minute substitute for someone who was not able to make the flight to make the presentation. And she seemed to be startled by the fact that as a rookie presenter that she actually won Best of Show there as well. Clearly, other people agreed that she did a very good job, and she seems to now be on the circuit as one of their regular presenters. Or you figure, hey, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Send the person who brought home the hardware last time, too. Another company that put new branding out there this last time around, I wouldn't say Dreams was new branding, it was more of a new structure, but this next company, FinShape, it wasn't until I actually started this interview that I realized that it was actually a company I'd seen before with a new name. And I think that this shows that branding can sometimes be pretty powerful because it kind of created a fresh look for me and kind of brought a new kind of perspective in terms of what they were doing. So let's have an listen to Joseph Neary from FinShape and what they've got going on.
I'm here with Joseph Neary, who is the co-CEO of FinShape, which I was about to ask if this was your first Finovate, and then I just discovered that FinShape is the new brand for a company that I know quite well, WUP, W.U.P., who has been a regular on the Finovate stage for some time. First off, thanks for taking the time to talk, Joseph.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for letting me the opportunity to be here.
So this is a very new branding. When did you start to transition over to the new branding of FinShape?
Recently, end of last year, we have teamed up with another banking software provider in Europe called BSC. And jointly, we decided to start using this new brand name of FinShape, which is to be a one-stop shop for digital banking technology for tier one, tier two banks as a global player, but our core markets are Europe, Middle East, and Asia Pacific.
Wonderful. I know you're based in Budapest, and congratulations on winning another Best of Show. I'm pretty sure.
Thank you so much.
One in the past is WAP, but now you've got one under FinShape as well. And I'll just also learn something new as we were just talking a bit. You've got a partner here in the U.S. with Nimbus, who we know quite well.
Exactly. So there are business partners in the U.S. Already having a few clients we work together with, and it's a great potential.
Great. So if you could maybe just from kind of an elevator pitch standpoint, very briefly, kind of describe what your product is looking to, what pain points you're looking to solve.
Yes, sure. So our latest innovation that we have showcased on Finovate London 2 days ago is a money management / PFM new take, which we call Money Stories. And basically, it addresses the problem that old school PFM tools are only used by a very, very small fraction of end customers people just simply don't use them. It's too cumbersome, needs too much time and effort. And what we have done is basically provided a totally automated and very, very simple, quick Instagram-like story representation of money insights and also carbon insights. And that's basically making end customers' attention span or use of these attention span, which is not more than 5 to 10 seconds, and provide all of us, retail customers, small business customers, bite-sized pieces of information, which are like swipeable, easy to digest, pretty much like how we consume Instagram stories.
Yeah, I think you've hit on an age-old problem. I mean, the people who use PFN love it. I mean, I know that that's been going on forever, but it's a very small slice of the population. And it's interesting that you're referring to Instagram Live, because my first thought, 5 to 10 seconds, I mean, I was thinking TikTok. So same basic idea. So it's a customized, or what type of information are you serving up in those 5 to 10 second packets?
Yeah. So what you see in these money stories, 5 to 10 second snapshots of your finances, is pretty much the tip of the iceberg. And underneath, there is quite a complex data analytical engine behind which constantly analyzes customers' incomes, customer spendings, cards, transactions, and provide information about the stuff which is really needs attention. Only outlier or sort of unusual transactions, spendings or income, or something which is usually there but now is missing. So things that most customers would definitely need to pay attention to. And things like if I'm spending way more than I usually spend, and why is that? Was there an unusually big spending? And if there was, is it going to repeat, or do I need to adjust my spendings, or is it within the normal frame? But also, if I'm a freelancer, I'm usually having different income sources, and one of them just forgot to be there. Somebody forgot to pay me, and then call out the attention about that for a customer. Sometimes it is just like financial consciousness. I need to be aware of what's going on with my money, and especially if there is something off. It's like you stand on a scale every day and you look at the number. It doesn't necessarily have a call to action, but it stays in your mind, and you just know more about the everyday status of your money.
So yeah,
No, that's the biggest part of it. It's like do the deep work of financial data analysis for customers, and only show them what's really important in a very short snapshots. Just really stealing the time of a customer what's really needed.
That makes sense. I mean, one of the things I jotted down that, I mean, it's one of those kind of safe to spend balance concepts. That you know, you look at the recurring monthly expenses, so people can kind of, you know, you're analyzing behind the scenes. If you know what other typical expenses always come up later in the month, and you can see if it looks like someone's kind of on a path where they may be having a challenge before the next inflow. So that does sound extremely valuable, like you say, to really bring the outliers to people's attention.
Yeah, exactly, and especially now in this part of the world, Europe, inflation is rising, and everybody's expecting higher and higher bills, even utilities or just everyday spendings. And just to look at this, that in 2 months ago, my overall spendings were like 10% less than today. So inflation is really, really hitting me. Might be a very useful piece of information for a given customer.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, because that also really kind of stuck with me from your presentation, that you mentioned that you think that inflation could serve as a driver for maybe not the traditional kind of PFM adoption, but the type of PFM, you know, understanding the, you know, it sets yet another level of uncertainty Yeah, because people's bills go up. Suddenly, it's not the exact same amount you're going to be paying every month for groceries or electricity or something like that. So you believe that could actually be a driver for, you know, for people to have a greater need and a greater interest in this type of information?
I think so. I think this one or this could be one of a surprising fact for customers, that when you go to the gas station and assuming you don't have an electric car, but if you go to the gas station and you don't even realize that you're spending slightly more on gas, but at the end of the month you see that okay, this was like 25% more than it's used to be, than the usual one, this is not the only one where it is way more your usual spending on everyday living, but there are like these three other merchants or categories that are now definitely way more. So you need to pay attention how much you actually spend compared to your income. This will be an eye opener, I believe.
And it's really, I mean, I hadn't really thought about it this way before. The last time we had to deal, and maybe this isn't true in Europe, I'm sure in certain countries it's been different, but at least here in the States, the last time people had to really think about that kind of lack of price stability was the early 1980s. Nobody was using a PFM back then. Nobody was online. So these whole solutions didn't even apply. So it's an entirely new world. So you've got a really neat opportunity there.
I think so. And it's kind of sad that an inflation type of externality is driving the adoption of an otherwise great piece of technology. And that's another thing that is now constantly building up, and we use financial data for also environmental good is. Within our money stories, we also have what we call carbon stories. And carbon stories are about like how your everyday spending do affect the environment. What is your CO2 emission? What is your CO2 emission compared to your peers, compared to your city average or national average? What are your major spendings that are driving big time your CO2 spending? And we see more and more and more people are very, very interested in this. Putting in front of the customers that, did you know that your carbon emissions are way more than your peers? And these are the things that that are driving this high. So maybe you will want to pay attention to this.
Yeah. I mean, and not certainly didn't mean to imply that you're cheering on inflation, but as out of crisis comes opportunity, you know, FinShape is not causing the inflation, but they can solve the pain point that actually is created by it, which is
yeah, awesome. Definitely.
So if people want to learn more, the branding is now FinShape, so that's the website to visit?
Yeah, finshape.com.
FinShape.com.
Exactly. Thank you.
Great. Joseph Neary, co-CEO of FinShape, one of the best of show winners at Finovate Europe this week. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
So thanks again to the former WUP, W.UP, which I always thought maybe might have made more sense in the European theater for some reason than it did here in the States. But I think the FinShape branding certainly makes more sense. And obviously, we're good friends with the folks over at Nimbus. So interesting to see them partnering in the US market with them as well. As we've always point out, these links that we talk about are available. I know most people tend to be finding our podcast these days versus the usual sources of finding online streaming services, Apple Music, Spotify, Stitcher, etc. But if you do go to the website, big-fintech.com, under the media tab, we have our show notes for every episode, and you'll find the various links to access to the resources that we refer to. Let me also mention there were three other Best of Show winners at the event that we'll not be speaking to, but I think they also deserve accolades. Two of them speak very directly to some of the hottest topics in financial technology these days, so not surprising that they would rise to the top of the stack. TrulyU, which if you think about the name, says exactly what they're doing, spelled T-R-U-L-I-O-O, TrulyU, get it? End-to-end identity platform is what they offer, and obviously with KYC and whatnot, very important these days. And another company, Moob, I'm not sure how you pronounce that, it's M-M-O-B, and they are an embedded finance solution. So both of them stood out and won best of show. And then another one that I actually liked quite a bit, but frankly just isn't in my wheelhouse for the things that I tend to focus on, a company called Sesame, I believe again how it's pronounced, with these fintech companies who have kind of odd names, which, well, on one level makes the search engine optimization tricky. On the other hand, it's probably because they can't find names that aren't already claimed that are straightforward. This one is spelled S-E-S-A-M-M, and they are an AI engine to gather insights out of reams and reams of published investment data about companies. So they go out and aggregate and pull out the important information for folks who are tracking companies in their portfolios to see what's being said about them. Interesting stuff. Those three out there also won best of show, so thanks to them. And as I mentioned before, the way that we've always approached this is that I talk to the people that earned my best of show vote, or at least rose to the top of the stack for me. And we've got two more of those conversations, and I guess I'm a little by little learning the tricks of the trade and clickbait or whatever, but we'll be having those discussions and interviews next week, on next week's episode of The Big Cast, part two of our Finovate highlight coverage. And I won't tell you which ones we spoke to, because maybe a cliffhanger isn't so bad to bring you back to check out the next time we go up with live with a new episode next Tuesday. I will say that one of them ties again, as I just mentioned about embedded finance and KYC identity for a couple of the winners, one that I was pretty surprised didn't win, because it again kind of scratches the itch of one of the really hot topics in the space, and one that John Best, our grand poobah, has talked about quite a bit. So how's that for dropping a few hints? So please check us out then. Check us out before then, too, at the website big-fintech.com. You can always find me, Glenn Sarvati, via my company, 154 Advisors. I'm on Twitter at 154 Advisors. The Best Innovation Group's on Twitter at Big Fintech. Or you can find John Best himself on Twitter at JB Fintech. With that, another episode in the books. As I said, part two and more, I think, really great stuff coming out of Finovate Europe. Thanks always to the Finovate people for helping us to participate in that. And we'll have two more interviews from that space next week. Until then, thanks for listening and have a great week.
Check back each week for the latest from the Big Cast. Or better yet, we hope you'll consider subscribing for free via Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have questions or comments, we'd love to hear from you. Tweet us at Big Fintech, email info@big-fintech.com, or visit us at big-fintech.com and click on the Media tab, where you can post a comment or check out our archive of hundreds of past episodes. See you next week.